Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Cam Layton and Brian Polson from Oxygen Amps. Oxygen Amps is a boutique amp company out of Vancouver who has set to build an amp with three distinct sounds while being built with the highest quality parts with a unique and beautiful look. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott. I've been drinking Jack Daniels, so.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Hey, Mr. Scott.
Apparently, I wouldn't pass a breathalyzer here, man. I can't speak. I don't know.
I don't think that has anything to do with liquor.
No, I have not been drinking, but I'm just stupid because I can't talk.
That's okay. So how you been? How you been doing?
I'm doing good.
You've been really busy, I can tell.
Yeah, I released two new videos. So I released out the video on the Shure Wireless GLX-D system. So that's pretty cool. That's a super, super tough little wireless unit that mounts on your pedal board. And then I also got up the Steve Hunter string change buddy, which is a pretty cool little device, and when you see it, you're like, dang it, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, it's simple, but it's like it's really handy if you're restringing Bigsby's.
Yes, and then the one thing that does irritate me, though, is everyone's like, oh, well, I could just make that myself. Why make it yourself? Pay the man that came up with the idea, the $7 or whatever it is. It's not even a lot of money. And give the guy credit that came up with the idea. It's a cool little device.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, yes. So I'll look at, I haven't had a chance to look at that video, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, but check out the videos that are up on my YouTube channel on Selenium, and then Steve Hunter put it out too, so I was pretty excited that he did that. So that was
cool.
Very nice.
You did some other ones, though. You have some other stuff. What else have you been releasing?
Well, those I did already. Those were like, you know, the Hot Tone pedal, the Audio-Technica, the tips and tricks. So yeah, and then I've got other ones coming out from our show that we shot here.
Oh, okay.
No, but nothing else new. I've just posted a bunch of pictures.
Oh, your guitar porn pictures.
Yes, well.
But they're beautiful. The guitars that you have are great. They're great guitars. Oh, that's good.
What have you been up to, Jeff?
Actually, it's been a Martin week for me. I've been pulling out the Martins and been working on them. I've been playing some stuff. I'm going to be doing some more session work with those guys. So it's been working my chops up, getting my finger picking, and then that Rosewood guitar that we had on the Guitar Hummer, it just sounds great. It's just really mellowed out. So I'm tempted to put it on a little bit more, but it actually sounds good the way it is. So,
when it mellows out, does it like play slower, or what does it do? I'm just kidding.
It just goes. It's cool, man. It's all right.
Yeah.
No, it's a little deeper, a little richer in the lower mids. Yeah. At least that's what I'm noticing on it. It still tinkles and it's got the brightness, but it's not as bright as it was. Which it's more settled in. So I think it's interesting. You know, we've talked with other people about aging your guitars, and I think even last week I was talking to Frank off the air about that, how there's different processes of doing that. And it's quite fascinating how they, you know, that's an important thing now, is to get the guitar already pre-aged so you don't have to break it in. That's kind of interesting to me.
It's the only time we like old instead of new.
Well, I mean, you know, my original guitar I played for 30 years. This Martin now, I'll be dead by the time it ages perfectly. So I got to hurry it up. So it's not too bad. But, no, it's an interesting idea, and it just shows you the science that goes into a lot of these guitars. It's amazing.
I heard you could put your guitar in a washing machine and turn it on, and it'll age it.
It could do more than age it. So, but anyway, we got a great show for you tonight. It's all about tone, and we're going to get with it with Oxygen Amps. But let's go ahead and take a break, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. Number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Hey, this is Brian Wampler with Wampler Pedals, and you're listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
We are back. And tonight we have a great show for you. We got some friends up north, our neighbors up in Canada, in Vancouver. We have Oxygen Amps, and we have Cam Layton, the owner of Oxygen Amps, and Brian Polson, he's one of the guys that demos his amps and been using them a lot and is a good expert on what they can do. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure having you guys.
Jeff, hi, Scott.
Can you get a little closer to the mic? You're a little far away.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
We got them over in Brian's studio that's being reworked. So you can hear it's a little distant over there, but he's basically coming in through Skype. And he also has one of the amps set up. We'll be demoing that, and also we have some clips that they gave me that we can show the amp so you can get an idea what it sounds like in a studio situation. So anyway, starting off, tell us a little bit, give us a brief history a little bit, Cam, about your company and what you're trying to achieve with the amps, and you know why you're doing what you're doing.
Sure, sounds good. Can you hear me okay?
Come a little bit closer.
Okay, how's that?
That's better.
Okay, so the original concept, try and take a clean beam and a crunch sound and combine that to one amp, sort of the classic sounds that a lot of things are looking for. So we originally...
Cam, can you get closer? You're gating. The Skype is gating you. You need to get right on the mic.
Is that better?
That's better.
Okay, sorry. So let me start over. The original concept was to try and get a clean cream and a crunch sound all in one amp. Sort of the classic sounds that players are looking for. The original prototype actually had a three-channel amp, and with all the problems that involved in terms of switching, we opted for a two-channel design that still incorporates all three sounds, but what it does is it's got two channels. The first one is called a clean boost, and the other one is a cream channel. So the clean boost essentially has both the clean and the crunch sound combined in that one channel. And the way we do that is with the boost function, it engages another gain stage, really just another tube, a 12AX7. So you've got that clean and crunch sound, and then the cream sound in a separate channel.
So the cream sound is basically just a straight distorted sound. And I notice that you have a switch rather than a variable tone adjustment. You have like four presets for it?
Yeah, four-position tone switch, that's right.
Can you explain what they do?
Well, it really just cycles through different capacitance values. So generally, I think that the idea behind that was that a player would find his or her sweet spot and not necessarily adjust that control all the time. You'd find that position that you really liked that was set up for your guitar, and then you would typically run with it. It's not something that you're going to mess with constantly. So it's a really simple channel in terms of the controls. It's really just, like I said, that one switch that you set up, you leave, and then you've got the volume control.
Okay, let me play a clip of Brian using his Les Paul with that cream. I think he explains on that clip the different. He goes through the different settings. Let me play that real quick, and then we can go further.
Let's head on over to the cream channel here. I'm going to start the cream channel off with the tone setting at about 10 o'clock. I'm going to bring the volume up to about 10. Here we are. Definitely a more trebly setting for this channel. I like that a lot. Here's the next setting. Here is 12 o'clock setting.
Now, let me ask both of you guys, that distortion that you're getting, are you pushing the speaker, or is that really coming from the preamp going in the power amp? Is that basically in the amp, or are you actually really driving that speaker?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. We're doing neither, actually, Jeff. What's happening there and what the Oxygen is designed around is using power amp clipping to produce the even-order harmonics that give you the kind of gain sounds that were being brought forward in the late 60s and early 70s when guys were playing Plexis and JTM 45 designs. None of those amps, for example, had preamps. They were all just volumes. And so the only way you could get that tone was to max them out. And when you do that with a 100-watt amplifier, you'll get the tone, but you also get an incredible amount of volume. So the Oxygen has a feature called a scale switch, which allows us to control the amount of voltage hitting the transformer, which means we can have the power amp of that amp reacting like it's on 10, when in fact the decibel levels aren't going to be taking your head off. It's only an 18-watt amp, let's make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it's about. It's not about preamp distortion. It's about power amp clipping. And that's what all the great tones we've come to love from that era are all a result of. And I will say, not to endorse anybody else, but there are a lot of amp manufacturers out there that are chasing that same grail. I could elaborate more if you'd like.
Well, I know that that's what Eddie called the brown sound. And I use when I want to get that sound out of, like, for example, I have a real old Bandmaster, cream Bandmaster, and what I usually do is I use a power attenuator. So I punch the power stage, but I attenuate what's going into the speaker. So basically, you're developed a way where you can drive the power tubes, but you're not just shoving all that volume into the speaker, right?
Well, power attenuators are a great idea. The first one I saw was by Tom Schultz many years ago, called the Power Soak. The problem with power attenuators, they've come a long way, mind you, but you're putting a huge strain on your amp, because it's like taking a car, running it wide open, but you only want 30 miles an hour out of it. So your tubes, your components, because when you drive power, you create heat. When you create heat, you begin to affect things like resistance, signal path. You even start melting things. So that's the only downside to power attenuation. The scaling feature we have is actually created by a gentleman in the UK, and we use that technology. We pay him for that. It's called London Power Scaling. The only other amp I know that has it right now is the Badger Sur that's out there. It also uses that same kind of feature. And it's a relatively new kind of approach to getting that power amp clipping. It's the one hurdle we face in bringing this amp to people who aren't aware of that, because they don't know if they can treat it like a master volume. They don't know really how to address it. And ultimately, what you're just trying to do is find your tone, and then you can adjust the decibel level accordingly.
Oh, okay. But it's so you're basically the power scaling. Is it the voltage going from coming out of the power transformer? You're basically retarding you're limiting the voltage there, but still driving. I don't understand how you get the tube to distort.
You're limiting the voltage to the output stage.
Oh, okay.
See, when Eddie got the brown sound, he used a thing called a variac, and what he was doing was externally controlling the voltage running to the amp. One of the sad things that Mr. Van Halen did for many years was he told people he cranked it. Like, so a lot of people thought he was running his amp at, like, you know, 140 volts or something. Well, that just destroyed amplifiers. What he was doing was running him at about 90 volts, so he could pin that amp wide open, and the amp's not being, you know, blown apart. And that was the secret to his tone.
Right, he was using the variac, but I heard the variac was bad for your amp.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah. All that stuff is bad for your amp. I mean, it's supposed to run at 110 or 120, I guess. I mean, when those things are built and assembled, there's a certain threshold of voltages and all those things, impedances that are supposed to be used. And innovators like Eddie Van Halen or Jimi Hendrix or any guys that are breaking the mold usually step outside of the box.
And that's, Jeff, that's one of the benefits of the power scaling is it saves your tubes, it saves your transformers. You still get that loud sound, but yet at a much lower volume.
Okay, so you're basically just limiting the voltage to the output stage of the power tubes, but not anything else. So yeah, you're not damaging the rest of the circuit or straining it, right? Is that...
But I will intervene. We are currently working on another kind of modification of that whole concept. I don't want to muddy the water here, but we are looking at a system that will reduce it across the entire circuit. We're just messing with that right now. We're not sure what we're going to do about it, but you could do that if you wanted to. But you are correct. At this point, it's just at the transformer.
Well, I'm curious when you finalize more of your experimentation, how much that affects the sound. If you know, retarding the voltage at the preamp stage, is that, I mean, it should color it, but I mean, how does it color, you know, is it worth it? Is it good or bad? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, because if you're looking for increased harmonics at the preamp level and you begin to reduce voltage there, well, then of course that's going to reduce that, so your distorted sound will clean up. But having said that, I need to reiterate, and this is so important with regards to the oxygen, we're not too concerned about preamp distortion. That's not at all what we're chasing.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for power and clipping, and that's where all those juicy even order harmonics come from. Anybody who's played an amp a lot, like you could have it in your studio or in your room, and you got a nice, you know, you crank up the preamp, you get a distortion, then you take it on stage, and all of a sudden it just didn't sound the same. And that's an important thing in a discussion about tone. I hate to digress, but when you're playing in different acoustic environments, be it, you know, 1 week centered by maybe wood, next week maybe plexiglass, if you're in an arena, maybe concrete, that amp is always going to sound different. I hate to think how many great amplifiers I got rid of because I blame them for the bad sound. When finally, you know, I worked with a great audio engineer who explained to me that, you know, I'm in a different acoustic environment every week, and so my ears are hearing things differently. That's a really important consideration for anyone in pursuit of a good tone. There's going to be a certain level of compromise you're going to have to make yourself, not the gear, but yourself when you're trying to have that. You just won't have the kind of consistency. That's why it's a never-ending quest. That's why you guys have the radio show. We're always looking for it.
Yes, no, but it's all about tone. That's true. But let's also let's mention one of the things you talk about is the components, and you're a real stickler for quality components.
Yeah.
You use a classic tone power and output transformer, or people can upgrade to a Mercury Magnetics power transformer. I know that the classic tone is custom made to your specs. Can you talk a little bit about that sound, and then tell me what the Mercury Magnetics helps or brings to the picture?
Well, that's a good question, and I hesitate to compare the Mercury with the classic tone because it's not apples and apples. But we did an A/B test on two different amps, well, several different amps, using the Mercury in one and the classic tone in the other, and let's say 7 times out of 10, the result was the player enjoyed the classic tone, liked the tone better from the classic tone transformers. So that's why we were using that as sort of our main transformer. If someone wanted the Mercuries, then certainly we can offer those. But the classic tone are a well-made unit, very well-made, and we don't have to make any excuses for those at all.
So then if you guys think the classic tone is the best, then why would you offer the Mercury, I guess, my question.
Well, the customer is always right, Jeff. The customer is always right.
That's Scott. But yes, no, I get it. But I mean, what's your opinion of the difference in the sound? I mean, I'm directing this to Brian as a player.
You know, these are subtle nuances, and I personally, having played guitar now for 35 years, there's a lot of finer details I've come to just release. There are things that are beyond my control, and I just can't say that it would matter that much to me. I mean, with the classic tone, there are other contributing factors for that decision, as well as it sounding possibly better. I don't know if we want to get into that, but myself personally, so much of the tone is right in the player's hands. It's like an old synth with the attacked sustain, decay, and dynamics you'd see in a mini Moog. I mean, Eddie Van Halen, Ted Nugent could jump on Eddie Van Halen rig and sound like absolute crap, right? It probably would. But no, did I say that? The reality is that so much of it is in the player's hands. And so what amp manufacturers like Oxygen can try to do is ensure that what we can assure will be there, the necessary frequency, the bandwidth that's relative to the guitar, and certainly that beautiful breakup and even order harmonic distortion from the power amp. That at least does as much as possible to ensure that those fundamental aspects are there. And then the rest is really up to the player. Velocity of the pick, how hard the strings are being compressed to the neck itself. Those are the things I'm more dialed into than some of the component aspects. Cam, of course, will have other reasons to pick some of those things. Could be a cost factor. It could be a relationship factor with the supplier. It could be availability. You know, if we get a run to do 70 amps, can we get 70 Mercury magnetic transformers? All those things. And these are complete. I'm just making conversation here. These aren't things that have happened. I'm just saying that's kind of my take on it.
Well, maybe then another way to approach it is how important is a high quality transformer in your guys' opinion? Whether it's Mercury or a classic, because
My opinion has got more to do with its roadworthiness, its ability not to fail. You can tell when a transformer is starting to go. You're going to start hearing hum in the amp before, let's say, even the standby is on. I mean, anyone who's blowing a transformer, you know when it's about to happen, and when it does, it's a very lovely smell that hits the air. There'll be a lot of people that probably never had a transformer fail, but if you have toured 51 weeks a year for 10 years, like I have, you've blown a few transformers, and there's no rhyme or reason as to why that'll happen. They just fail. They just give out. It could be like getting a flat tire on a car. It just happens. As for the contribution to the tone, you know, we did do the testing, and you can hear subtle differences. There's no doubt about it. But that's a distinction for Cam to make and some of the other people he worked with. I love them both. That's why we offer them both. I couldn't say one is truly better than the other. I would take either one of them and be completely happy.
Just let me just add a couple things. In terms of the classic tone, the build quality is just outstanding on those transformers. We've worked closely with magnetic components, and as Jeff mentioned, the ones that we're using are custom designed for us, not just for tone, but also for ease of manufacture. So they've added a couple features that makes it easier for us to build the amps. So the combination of all of those things is what went into the decision.
Now, speaking of components, let's talk a little bit about that. Now, obviously, your quality control and you're having things custom built there, so the quality of these transformers is very consistent. But one of the complaints that we've heard from other manufacturers is the inconsistency of, like, tubes, other parts of the circuit, you know, caps, all of that stuff. Are you finding that a problem of trying to find consistent quality, or are you guys okay? Are you finding that pretty much the stuff's handling, or is it important?
Well, it's critical, yeah. And I guess just to start with, we could talk about tubes for a second, because those are probably the most, what should I say it, the one of the biggest factors in the tone that you get out of your amp, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of consistency, tubes are probably one of the things that, that give us the most headaches. So what we've done is we've started to use, not exclusively, but mostly TAD tubes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely pleased with those. We still use some JJs and some Mullards as well. But what we do is essentially we audition every tube. So TAD tubes, although they are all tested, certified, matched, et cetera, we still audition every tube. We test every tube just to make sure that it does what it's supposed to do. So just in terms of quality and consistency, it is critical, absolutely.
Okay, but now the other components, like the caps and other circuit parts of the circuit, everything's pretty consistent. You've been able to keep that, or, you know, because I don't know where you get your caps from, or whatever, the resistors or whatever, but
yeah.
Are they, you're finding that they're pretty consistent, you're not having a problem?
They're a lot more consistent than tubes, for sure. Having said that, we do deal with many different suppliers, and the reason why we've chosen those suppliers is really quality. So
okay.
the quality that we get from those suppliers is exceptional. I mean, there are the odd component that does fail, but again, our designers and builders are testing those things as well. So every amp obviously is tested
right
before it's shipped out.
Mm-hmm.
It's burned in for hours and hours before we sell it.
Now, what about the speakers? Now, I noticed that you guys use Scumbags, and which model are you primarily using for that? And you mentioned also that you can order Celestians. Have you tried any other speakers, like Eminence, or if you can find Fanes, or, I mean, how does it work with those type of speakers, or what have you found?
Well, we certainly looked at lots of different speakers, and there are some really good speakers out there. So Scumbag doesn't have the market cornered on good speakers, certainly. Again, I think part of it was offering something that's just a bit different. I think that was part of what we were doing. Kind of the whole concept of this amp is to do some things that are kind of different than everyone else would do. I think the fact that we've got some custom transformers, the fact that we have some features that are different, the fact that the amp looks completely different than anything else that's out there. The choice of Scumbag speakers kind of was consistent with that whole goal to produce something that's unique, different, and we think better. So the reason the speakers that we're using, like I said, are Scumbag, obviously, and the ones that we've chosen are the M75s and the H75s.
Mm-hmm.
This 112 combo has an M75 in it. In the 212s and in also the extension cabs, we often mix the two as well, just to give some different tonal qualities to the amp.
Now, because you don't have that much wattage, you're using, yep, it's a lower wattage amp. Have you tried the Scumbag's paper cones?
We haven't yet. We haven't tried those. We've certainly tried all sorts of other speakers.
Because guitar players and also Jim from Scumbag has mentioned that's a desirable sound. I was just curious because your amp actually is low enough wattage where you don't have to worry about blowing it up. Because I know they can't take a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Exactly. Yeah, and we've certainly been in conversation with Jim too, just in terms of recommendations as to what he would suggest.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not, the process isn't finished. I mean, we haven't absolutely said we're never going to use a different speaker in this amp. I mean, like I said, like Brian was talking about earlier, we continue to try and tweak and improve and get that sound that the player is looking for. And oftentimes it's quite subjective as well.
In terms of Celestion, what do you like for, what's your preference? And also, Brian, you can chip in here. What's your preference for a Celestion? What would you use on there?
I like the vintage 25.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of used that ever since Mike Soldano many years ago came out and said that through extensive testing, that was his speaker of choice for his amplifiers. That was some time ago, but I find a lot of manufacturers seem to use them. You know, Celestion, the name's kind of like Coca-Cola, isn't it? It's just a name that we associate with Marshalls and...
Well, there's so many. I mean, we've had them on, and there's so many. They actually make a lot more speakers than people realize. And, right. Like, for example, I'm curious, have you tried the Blueback on there or their Creamback? There's their Greenback. And then there's their Gold. So,
right.
The Alnico. I mean, have you guys done any experiments with those, or what do you like better, or have, you know, what you've heard from those?
At this point, we haven't tried to audition all of those different speakers that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the, I guess the, as Brian mentioned, the Vantage 25 was one of the ones that we were focusing on. The Heritage G12 H55 is one of the ones that we really like as well. Again, it's one of those things that we have to continue to review, I guess.
So, mm-hmm. So you guys seem to lean towards ceramic rather than Alnico.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Which would kind of make sense because you guys are kind of more doing British sounds anyhow, which they don't usually use Alnico.
Well, yeah, but also, too, because they're distorting at the power stage. The you know, one of the cool things about Alnico is it breaks up a little better. It's a little mellower in the breakup. It's not as critical, I think, for your amp, because you're not really breaking up the speaker. So I can see that you have a lot more options to, you know, in terms of what you can use, because the speaker isn't as, you know, a flatter or a higher frequency response speaker actually can work for you.
Yep. Yep.
You know, in terms of that.
What kind of, are your cabinets closed back, open back? What do you prefer for your kind of amp?
For the extension cab, you mean?
Well, I mean, whether you get the combo or you get an extension cab, are you guys building them open back or closed back?
The extension cabs are closed back. The combos are open.
Okay. Now, Brian, as a performer, what's your preference? Do you like, are you, well, if you're playing clubs, I presume you're going to want the open back, but are right. you, are any advantage, or what's your experience using closed back versus open back?
Well, I mean, closed back are more directional. An open back kind of fills the room a little bit because just you're getting sound out of the back of the cabin as well, obviously. My preference is I like an ambient sound. I don't like it too direct.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally like an open back, but it depends on what kind of music I'm playing. If I was playing something that was more metal, heavier, then I like closed back because it seems to retain a little more punch. And generally, extension cabinets like that are two speakers or four, so you got more air moving. They just seem to work better. But I generally tend to use a 112 now more than ever for most of the stuff I'm doing.
So you're not, so there's no need for the 212 for you?
Well, not really. You know, there's a lot of factors that factor into that, too, that maybe don't have anything with sonic qualities. I'm getting older. I want to be able to make one trip from the car to the stage.
I hear you.
There was a time I had four 412s on stage, and I mic'd one speaker. I don't know what to say about that. Mm-hmm. I just saw Malmsteen come through town. He had, I think, 38 cabinets, and one of the guys who worked the show took the picture. He had one speaker mic'd up.
Well, so, there's a video of him showing, and none of the amps that are up there work except for like one or two.
And that's all good. I mean, it's rock and roll, right? There's that Spinal Tap element. I mean, I just did a workshop last week with a guy named Tosin Abbasi, who plays guitar in a band called Animals as Leaders.
Mm-hmm.
He plays an A-string Ibanez, and he uses an Axe FX. And we talked a bit about this, but I mean, with an A-string guitar that gets that guttural, there's not a lot of amps around that can really take that kind of frequency and give it the clarity required. So he's dealing with that piece of technology. And that, if you don't mind my digression, I mean, here we are in a digital world talking on Skype right now on your LA Talk radio show, and yet we're talking about a tube amplifier. in the digital age. And there's a good reason for that, because there's still one type of tone that even the Axe FX or even some of the greatest modelers just can't get, and that's that breakup right between clean when it approaches crunch. They just can't do it. And that's why tube amplifiers are still an important part of the serious guitar seeking tone today, because if you want that AC30 breakup, whereas the Beatles things you're looking for, Brian May, Queen, it's not like a really raunchy preamp on 10 master volumes Marshall rock sound. It's that chimey Tom Petty type tone. It's that Brad Paisley country spank. You put a Telecaster into an amp like this, and it's just a marriage made in heaven.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is really cool, because your amp is basically a two-channel. You have that clean crunch, and then you have that cream channel. And what's unusual about your amp is, besides A or B, you can do both. And I'm going to play a clip. This is from using your Strat, talking about this layering. So let's play that, and then let's talk a little more about that feature on your amp. Here we go.
One really cool feature I've discovered here is you can layer the channels. The AB box I have is also a Y box, meaning I can play two signals simultaneously. So if I were to put the here's the cream channel, and then I'm going to go to the crunch channel here. Crunch channel, I've got the boost off. So I've got the boost off, cut pretty much max, treble still at about 5:30, mid at 3, bass at 1. And so this is the clean crunch channel. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually Y signal into the cream channel as well. Here's the cream channel. And I'm actually going to go 12 o'clock on that, get a more mid. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play them both. So we're actually stacking. I'm going to turn down the cream channel. Slowly bring up the clean channel to blend with the, bring up the cream channel to blend with the clean channel. And that's pretty neat, because now I've got two kind of discrete sounds going on. If I now play a little bit quiet on the guitar, bring up the volume a bit. Bring up the crunch a little more. It's just kind of a neat idea to be able to layer those tones. And I mean, alternately too, with the two signal paths, you could run like one through some signal processing, like a compressor or a distortion or something like that, and have two sounds. It's kind of like on my I have a guitar with a piezo pickup on it, where I can have an acoustic sound and electric sound running simultaneously, and that creates some neat effects. And the amp, by virtue of having these channels, will allow that.
That's interesting, because in session work that I've done, where I've had to do a lot of gain, like a real high gain thing, but I was doing like a line, to bring it out, I would double the part and just run direct, the guitar direct, or run it simultaneously where they would take a direct out. So it's kind of interesting, because that effect kind of gives you that, to mix the two channels. I've never seen that in an amp. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. It's kind of something that wasn't exactly intentional, but in order to maintain the integrity and the signal path of the amplifier, it just seemed to be clear to actually get rid of the switching. Switching can sometimes affect the signal path. It can actually cause degradation to the tone if you're really making that your number one priority. Many years ago, there was an amp called the Fender Pro Sonic. And it actually disappeared from production simply because the channel switching was a fail. People didn't understand true bypass at the time, so it would gain up and you'd hit that switch and you'd get a pop. That's why that amp no longer is around, sadly. I guess the Supersonic now exists, not to talk about other product on your show. But that's case in point. So with this particular amplifier, it was decided to have the two discrete channels. And we're not saying that anyone has to buy a Y box or AB, but if you did want to switch between those channels, you would need to have an AB box. And we're of the opinion that Radial Engineering has the best AB box that is available.
Great, yeah, they make good stuff. That's true. Now let me ask you this though. But when you run the two channels, like I used to use. One of the tricks we heard to get more dirt out of our old Fenders was to run an AB switch, a splitter, and run it into both the normal and the vibrato channel. And cranking those both up, it would break it up more. It would drive the power stage. On your amp, when you're running all that stuff, and I can, you know, obviously when you were doing the layering with the Strat, you're adjusting it. You were getting more gain, and you were, you know, in one of the examples that you had where you said it was maxed out. Is it actually pushing the power stage more, or is that still kind of controlled? Using the two together, will that break up the power stage more, or is it more a matter of dialing clean in? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, I don't think it will, and I know what you mean. A lot of guys used to jump in the old Marshalls back in the day, channels 1 and 2, do the same thing. But no, that's not at all what's happening here. I'm actually trying to keep the one channel very, very clean, and the cream channel, of course, is usually distorted right from the get-go, and just trying to combine a hybrid sound, much like you said, almost like a double-tracking effect. So if you were playing something where you wanted more definition in a particular line, they would give that to you. Mm-hmm. It's a neat idea.
Yeah, no, it was nice. It was interesting when we had, especially since we had our little cue from Brian Wampler. Wampler makes a compressor, and one of the unique things about his compressor is the fact that you can run the straight, you can mix the straight signal uncompressed with it, so you still get the articulation, but you still get the compression. And it gives it a more, you know, you can hear the notes have a little more punch to them, but you can still get that, you know, that fatter sound. And it's a similar thing with your amp that I was noticing, that you could kind of get the articulation from the crunch channel and then still get the bloom from it.
Right.
One of the things that I wanted to mention from listening to the examples and stuff is that bloom. That distorted bloom, like what I mean by that is, you know, it's one thing to play the amp blown out, but when you like roll back your volume control, similar, you know, I mean, like, you know, you can take the tone off and get the woman tone that Clapton talks about, but just that kind of sound where you roll it back a little bit, so you're not really punching the amp, but it gets a little bit of that distortion, but it's clear, you know what I mean? Especially like when you're using the rhythm pickup and you get that really nice little bloom to it. You know what I'm talking about? Your
Absolutely.
Amp seems to do that pretty well.
Well, I think the idea of dynamic range, and I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. There are a lot of great guitar players who just go straight into an amplifier. And a lot of those guys are playing in a very conversational manner. And what I mean by that is I can talk very loud. I can talk very quiet. And, you know, a modeler or even a transistor amp is very linear. It doesn't see incoming input the way a tube amp does. I mean, if you crank a tube amp and then whack the guitar, you'll see those tubes light up when that signal hits. That's why tube amps are still relevant and important in the digital age, because they allow that particular phenomenon to happen. And there is a certain demographic of guitarists who are very expressive when they play who need that. They need to have the ability to play in a conversational manner in their improvisations and in their expressions. And, you know, I've tried to use certain type of amplifiers or certain type of guitar effectors, I might say, and it's not there. And so I either make the compromise and go ahead, or I plug into an Oxygen and all is fine.
Yeah, no, it definitely, I get what you're saying, Aaron. It makes sense. Now, one of the things that we did talk about that off the air before we started, and I want to bring that up, And this is one of the things I noticed from the demo is, and you guys, I want you to explain this, is one of the things I noticed that the amp, you didn't show on the amp, was like this really high gain sustain, like where you would really hold a note forever. Can you explain it? Because you guys said that's not what the amp was designed for. And can you talk a little more about that?
Without question. Good question. The question, quite frankly. And I wouldn't mind bringing up the gentleman, Wampler, that you spoke of, who's a pedal manufacturer who, you know, makes a variety of distortion pedals and overdrives. And certainly, if you had, you know, a 5150, you don't need a distortion pedal. If you've got a Mesa Boogie tread plate, you don't need a distortion pedal. Those amps produce that. And they do that with a 12AX7, you know, going ballistic inside the circuit. We're looking for the classic guitar tones, the foundation of all electric guitar that goes right back to what you had said earlier, the Bassmans, the JTM-45s, the Blues Breakers, you know, the stuff that Clapton made his tone on. And those amps, none of those things had preamp volumes. There may have been some kind of boost that was put in the front of them. You know, Hendrix had his Roger Mayer stuff. But we all know that Blackmore used to use a Revox tape recorder before he went to his amp to boost his signal. Eric Johnson used an Echoplex. The Exotic EP booster is a testament to that. Ed Van Halen used a Univox Echoplex to boost his signal pre the amp. These are some of the secrets that a lot of guys aren't aware about. So we want a foundational sound. This amp sees pedals like, it's just beautiful. It's so transparent. You could take Wampler's entire range and use this amp as a amp to demo him, and he would love it. Because I've put all kinds of pedals through it. It just loves those things. So if I want to use a distorted sound, really distorted, I put a pedal in front of it. But it would be a bit disingenuous of me to produce a distorted sound for Oxygen demo clips when, let's say, you know, I'm using a boiling point to generate the distortion. So that's why we presented it in all its glory the way we have, just as what it does. And if you want to put, like, signal processing into it, any kind of distortion pedal, you'll love it. Because most guys that buy that stuff have a boutique sensibility, and this amp falls right in line with that. It's a boutique amp, and we're aware of the fact that guys who would want to buy this amp, who accept no substitute for the best quality tone they can get, chances are they're going to have pedals that reflect that same type of desire.
No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, that's true. That's how we got around. We would boost the input into the, and especially into my Fenders. That's how I got that, to get it really sustain and feedback and do all that stuff. So that makes sense. And the tone is there. I have to admit that you guys are getting that sound. One other question. I was looking at the pictures on your site, which I want to mention is www.oxygenamps.com. I can't see the back panel. Do you have an effects loop on there?
No, not at this point. No, we... Again, kind of like the decision that was made with respect to switching, we decided to opt to leave that out because, as I'm sure you know, everything that you add affects the signal path. So we decided to leave that out. I suppose if someone wanted to do a special order, we could add that for them, but it's not something that we would make as a standard production run.
Okay, and then you guys, do you guys custom build a reverb in it?
No. We've left out reverb, we've left out trim. Basically, it's, I mean, if you look at the, like you say, look on the website, the controls are very simple. Very simple, and we've opted, again, just to leave all the features, those kind of different sound. We've opted to leave all that out, mostly because it affects the signal path. And truthfully, one of the main reasons is because some of those things are kind of flavor of the month. So if we put some particular reverb or trim in there, and the player doesn't like it after a few weeks or a month, they're stuck with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I know that a lot of my friends that use, like, older Super Reverbs or amps are twins, part of the distortion was the reverb distorting. They actually that was an integral part of their sound. I was just curious, because some of the, I know, like Marshall, no, there wasn't most of the big stacks and stuff, like Hendrix used, there was no reverb on them. But some of those other amps, they, it actually was part of, because it actually distorted. It was kind of an interesting sound.
Yeah, we kind of took the approach that we'll leave that out, we'll focus on tone. It's just pure tone and nothing else. And like Brian said, the amp will take any pedal that you can imagine, and you can alter your tone that way.
Mm-hmm. The secret, I mean, the secret to any good clean or distorted sound, I would think, is going to be a clean sound to begin with. I guess I can say this now, since Satriani is no longer with Peavey. But he used to have a three-channel amp called a JSX, and I had the good fortune to work with Joe at a guitar workshop. I do these every year. And he came into my class, and he did not use any of those channels. He plugged straight into the clean channel and used his distortion. Everything came off his pedal board. I was quite stunned, to tell you the truth, and also felt a little shocked at their marketing amplifier that, quite frankly, he didn't even use two-thirds of it.
Well, it's interesting, because the amp now that he has is a four-channel, 16 different sounds Marshall.
Yeah, and I bet you he uses one channel.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I can't say for that. I mean, we live in a retail world. It's a wonderful thing. And Joe, his guitar tone is certainly more modern. He's more in the Van Halen cusp of things. But that's just the way it was. And, you know, things like the Vox, he's got the Vox pedal line. I saw those things on the floor. He had two of the distortion ones, and I was quite surprised, to be quite honest with you.
So here's a silly question for you, just because I'm one of those guys that I'd like to know why. Why the name Oxygen?
There's a good question. It was one of those epiphanies that came to me one night, I think. I don't know if that's a good story or not. it was kind of a neat name, and as I thought about the name and how it related to music in general and tone specifically, it just seemed to kind of fit. And every time I thought about it, it was really easy to come up with the correlation between the word and different elements of tone.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I was just curious. That was just for
a question.
Well, Scott will come up with those kind of questions.
Wow.
One of the other things that I wanted to mention, I don't know where this fits, and if I'm jumping out of line, just tell me. But one of the things that we wanted to sort of highlight was the fact that the amp is really based on a ground plane circuit design. I don't know if that's something that you want to talk about.
Can you explain that real quick?
Well, really, most amps, most boutique amps, are either built using eyelet boards or turret boards. And generally, they're pieces of phenolic. All the components are soldered to them. They're sitting on standoffs above the chassis, and then there's various ground leads to ground those circuits to the chassis. But instead of doing that, what we do is a solid copper ground plane that's mounted directly to the chassis, and then all the components are soldered on terminal strips. And what that does is it basically eliminates any feedback, any ghost notes, any interference. It produces an extremely quiet amp.
Interesting. That's the way that Wah-Wah I built recently was terminal strips.
Terminal strips, that's cool. No, that makes it. I've heard about that before. Other people have mentioned that. And it definitely makes a difference. We're at the end of the show. We've already just, like, it's just flew by, and I told you guys it would.
Yep.
Before we go, though, I just want to, I gave it out. I'll give it out again. www.oxygenamps.com. And is there anything else, Cam, that you want to let everybody know about? And also, Brian, your information, where to get a hold of you, where you're playing, the whole thing.
Anyone wants to hear any of my madness, you can go to reverbnation.com/Brian Paulson. And there's everything on there, from jazz fusion to metal to comedy to my music is all over the map. Probably why no one's really heard of me too much. But you can hear that. I guess I'd like to say one thing, if I may, about our experience at the NAMM show earlier this year, which was really wonderful. We were sitting beside Buddy Beaton, of course, and right across from us was Eddie Kramer. And Well, let's just say that at the end of the show, Buzzy insisted on buying her amp. And he had two name brand amps sitting right there. And that just really felt like a win for us. And to have Eddie Kramer come over and say, hey, you know, what's going on with this thing? It sure sounds good where I'm sitting. Those were really definitive moments, I think, in the history of this company. And we really felt that we're on the right path when people like Buzzy Feet and Eddie Kramer are giving you kudos. You feel pretty good about yourself.
I'm still mad at myself for not knowing that Eddie Kramer was sitting there at the show.
You know what? Should have seen me. I when I saw the name, I didn't dial in. I thought maybe Kramer Guitars. I didn't dial in until the next day I saw a lineup of people with Hendrix records. And I consciously at that point said, okay, no Hendrix. It's going to be coming out of this amp today.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, so anyway, www.oxygenamps.com. Check it out. Take a look at them. They're beautiful amps. They're a unique design, and they really look nice. So they're quite effective on stage.
I heard they're coming out with a G-string model.
Oh, man. Can't get anything quiet these days.
But listen, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really a pleasure, and obviously we covered a lot, but we didn't cover enough. We didn't really get a chance to even show you. The time just flew, which means you're just going to have to come back on the show. So we're going to have you back on for sure. And we hope to see you guys at NAMM. We'll probably come visit you over at you'll be at NAMM this year?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll come by and maybe shoot some video over there.
That's awesome.
So thank you again. We really appreciate it. And everybody, check out their website. It's really, really cool. Guys, hang on till after the show. We'll talk to you real briefly after that. Scott, what's coming up video-wise for you?
Bruce Kulig, stuff from on air, so him going through his Les Paul Jr. style guitar, and then stuff from Falbo Guitars, which is really cool.
Okay. Listen, everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next week at the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Thank you.